Thank you very much for joining us on this panel about the CEE as part of the PwC Europe first joint transfer pricing seminar. And we wanted to start with the CEE panel, because many of our clients from the region have operations in the CEE, and Austria as the location for the seminar is like the door into the CEE. So before we address some specific particular documentation or administrative rules or how you interpret the transfer pricing provisions, let me ask a more general question about the economy in the CEE and how you see your operations there. So let me introduce Emese Forgács, who is a transfer pricing manager for Johnson Electric, with operations all over the globe, including the CEE, but also Europe, the US, and Asia. So how do you see your operations in the CEE? How do you see the region, knowing that economic growth is significantly bigger than the rest of Europe? So what are your initial comments about operating in the region as a multinational?
Thank you. Yes, so actually we are operating in the automotive market in more than 25 countries, and as you just mentioned, all over the world. And definitely the CE region is one of the most important. If it's coming to the value chain, we cannot avoid. Of course, it's part of the European Union. We have good and very great opportunities operating here. Also, actually, our business is driven by, and the new business generation is driven by, actually, the specification of the market in terms of the cost, quality, and reliability. And definitely, CE is one of the best place to do this. And that's why we are increasing the footprint here, not only in terms of the production, but also in the sales channels and also in the administration part.
Thank you. In preparing for this panel, we asked the PwC offices in 12 countries about how they see transfer pricing developments in the region and what sort of presence they see multinationals in the region. The answer is very much pointed to predominantly limited risk structures, shared service centers, manufacturing operations there, much less regional headquarters or financial services. I would like to ask Annika Mettler, who is the CE transfer pricing leader within PwC, as well as the Hungarian transfer pricing leader, to comment a little bit about what does the CE look like from a PwC perspective, and what do you see as the main issues and also the main differences, because you said you're not leading but more coordinating the operations in some 29 countries, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there are 29 countries in CE, speaking a little bit more like 20 languages. So it's not easy to lead. That's why I said it's rather coordinating. And then it's a very diverse group of companies. So if you're looking, for example, the industry or the tax environment. So when we were like preparing for this panel discussion, I was thinking that how we should differentiate the countries. And then maybe the easiest, if I strictly looking from transfer pricing point of view, that let's take the EU countries, which I think are kind of most understandable for the European, Western European countries or global, because these are the countries who follows the OECD recommendations, implementations more, and then these are the more developed countries in CE from transfer pricing point of view. We have Russia and the Eurasia countries who are actually, they are doing on their own way, I would say. So that it's They have special rules. They, of course, they look in what the OECD is recommending, but they pretty much implement what they prefer to implement, and then they have their own rules. And we have like the more emerging countries, you know, like if I see the Adriatic countries or the Baltic or the Balkan countries, that's really where you can see that the transfer pricing is developing, the tax environment, transfer pricing environment that is there, but it's still not that developed or focused than the other countries.
Okay, thank you very much. We asked our local practices about what are the most frequent topics that are being brought up by our clients, as well as what they see being brought up by tax authorities. And unsurprisingly, topping the lists were issues around management services, year-end adjustments, intercompany financing transactions, as well as transactions around essentially restructuring inbound, outbound, exit taxes, and so on. So I would like to turn now to Silvia Karolova, who is here with us from the Slovak Tax Authority, leading their international tax unit, to tell us something about how you see the region from a tax authority perspective, because I understand there is quite some cooperation on tax authorities level, and maybe you can also give us an insight, because not only you're leading the Slovak Tax Authority in this regard, but you're part of the EU Joint Transfer Pricing Forum, as well as working party 6 of the OECD. So maybe you can give us a bit of an insight here.
Oh, thank you. From perspective of tax administration, cooperation is very crucial. And especially what I can see that tax administration put a lot of resources to training of specialization of tax auditors. They created a group of tax auditors which are specialized especially on transfer pricing and international taxation. They put a lot of resources into their training, and also they put a lot of attention to cooperation, not only within the region, I mean region of V6 countries, which are Hungary, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Slovenia and Austria, but also at the EU level. Why the cooperation between tax administration are crucial? Because especially at the region level, we faced with the same problems. We have the common tax taxpayers, with common industry, with common profile, risk and functional profile. So yeah, cooperation and training, education is crucial, are the crucial points.
And in terms of this cooperation, is it something completely on an informal level, or do you have regular meetings among tax authorities?
Well, we started with regular meetings, and these regular meetings also help us with informal cooperation, with informal relationships. So now, it always depends on people, but now I can see that the cooperation, especially with these bordering countries, are much more on informal view.
Thank you, Silvia. Introducing our fourth panelist, Piotr Wierowka, who is leading the Polish transfer pricing practice, and the Polish transfer pricing practice is the biggest of the PwC practices in the region. Also, Poland is famous for some of its draconian rules when it comes to penalty regimes and approaching certain topics. From a transfer pricing perspective, also leading the way not only in the region but beyond with legislation when it comes to implementation of the BEPS rules or the DAC 6 mandatory reporting rules. So Piotr, what do you have to say in defense of Poland, or what kind of horror stories do you think could be interesting today?
I guess it's not about defending Poland. I mean, as you stated, we are leading the way, but the way that all the other countries will follow as well, namely, I guess it is about increasing transparency in cooperation between the tax authorities, but also between the tax authorities and taxpayers and broader audience. Namely, with all DAC 6 types of regulations, with increasing interest of tax authorities and taxpayers in APA cases, also with electronic tools for gathering information about the economic activity of the taxpayers, it is inevitable that the transparency of the business operations, business models, but also the ways we are dealing with tax aspects and the approach to performing the tax obligations. So to the extent the tax policies, the transparency will increase. And this is not only about Poland, this is not only about CE region, this is, in my view, the global trend.
Indeed, I think transparency is certainly a magic word there. So turning back to Sylvia before I would like to ask also Emese on her practical kind of experience of living this from a client side. What do you do? What do tax authorities do with all the information they receive? Because, of course, the whole backstory is about decreasing the perceived information asymmetry between multinationals and taxpayers. So now you have the master file, local file, CBCR. Do tax authorities even read what's there? And probably even more, for example, when it comes to data coming through the CBC reports, how do you approach that?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mariana. As you said, that now we have a huge bulk of information, and I think the challenge for tax administration is to use them in the most effective way. And I can tell from the Slovak perspective that Slovak tax auditors read everything what they obtain from taxpayers, and they read all this information very in very deep way, and this bulk of information and especially information which tax administration can obtain from international exchange of information from other countries are the subject of risk assessment. Mm-hmm. And before selecting taxpayers for tax audit, tax administration put a lot of attention into the risk assessment process, because transfer pricing audit is not easy kind of tax audit, and to spend efforts and to spend resources on tax audit with on taxpayers which is not risky. Mm-hmm. It's not good, not only for tax administration but also for taxpayers. So risk assessment process, combining all this kind of information which tax administration can have from internal sources but also from external sources, is very effective way.
Thank you. That's very interesting. We also asked our offices, and I'm turning to you, Emma Shane, in a second, about how they see the documentation burden in the region, and the overwhelming response was that it's fully compliant with the OECD's three-tier documentation standard, and a third of the responses were that, well, it's even more, which could mean many things in terms of providing evidence of performance of services and so on. So, Emese, what is your kind of practical experience around this increasing documentation burden? What do you feel as the biggest challenge in this regard, and how do you approach it?
Thank you. Yes, so definitely in the past 2 years, with the implementation of the BEPS Action Plan 13, the landscape completely changed and the game is changed, because before these requirements regarding the master file and the CBCR, the multinationals can afford mainly focusing on the local documentation requirement. It was even not mandatory in all of the countries. And putting the real fair market value and the proper documentation behind the transactions. But since we have now these new global requirements, and it's the same standard, so the minimum standard is given by the OECD, and as you just said, in some of the current countries it's more requirements related to this, it requires more effort from the multinationals, from the taxpayers, and it will result, I think it's more complex issue now, it's giving more presence to the transfer pricing team within an organization, and of course it's coming together with a lot of additional compliance requirements. So definitely it's a big issue. And what is really interesting for us, what you just asked from Sylvia, what will the tax authority do with these documentation? So this additional information about the full group, together with all the locations in the CBCR file or a full value chain description in the master file. So it can result more strategic decisions from the multinationals, how they plan the future in terms of the value chain and in terms of how to do business and why.
Thank you. That's very, very useful. Anita, how do you see what works in the practice in the region? When it comes to all these divergent rules, as well as just the generally increasing documentation burden, so when it comes to, let's say, APAs or rulings, do you recommend or do you see it works for our clients to start multilateral APAs or maybe parallel ones, and perhaps you could also reflect a little bit about on the topic of consistency in connection with the transparency issue?
Yeah, I think all the CE countries, there are several ways to increase the comfort for the taxpayers when it comes on transfer pricing or arm's length principle. And then clearly, yeah, the one way is to go for APA or bilateral APA, which is available now many CE countries. So even Russia introduced a year ago or 2 years ago, but all the Visegrad countries, Romania and other CE countries, it's available. And then what we see from the statistics that there are increasing number of APAs filed to the tax authorities or the Ministry of Finances. And then actually just what Sylvia told us recently, that, you know, on the cooperation among the tax authorities in the region, this is what I clearly see as a positive result coming out of it, that if there is an APA in, let's say, 3 or 4 countries in CE, it always helps if, let's say, the negotiation has already been started in other countries, and then as the tax authorities talk to each other, it really helps to move the whole negotiation process in another countries to go for a conclusion.
And just briefly coming back to the topic of the documentation, but moving more on to the issue of methods and practical application. In light of the increased transparency of the full value chain based on the master file information, based on CBCR, do you see a move in the direction of the application of the profit split method more, or is it probably more of just a a better or more precise application, let's say, of one-sided method. So maybe Sylvia, you could reflect on this from a tax authority's perspective, and then Piotr from a practitioner's view.
Well, it's very closely linked to find the right comparables, which is quite a big challenge, not only for taxpayers but also for tax administration. So, and from that perspective, I see in the future increasing of using profit split method because of lack of comparables. And just right now, we can see in practice that taxpayers and also tax administration still use traditional methods. I mean, TNMM is very popular because of comparables data from different sources of databases. But as I said, in future we will forced with the lack of comparables. So, and maybe, I think, not maybe, but sure, that profit split will be the way how to apply arm's length principle.
Okay, but before you say something, Piotr, just something came to my mind about the comparables issue, because I think this is something that's probably very interesting to everybody operating in the region. Maybe Anita, you have a view on that. To what extent are European comparables acceptable for CE tax authorities or in the practice of the CE? Or is it a requirement to go for something local? Or can the group use its European set of data when it comes to the TNMM method, to applying one-sided method?
Yeah, I think it's looking the sea. There is not one unified approach to that. But I think most of the countries saying that local comparables preferred, and then basically, you know, extending like for countries, and then the C countries and pan-European countries. So that's I think this is that's the kind of mainstream in the C countries that is accepted by tax authorities.
Okay. So now Piotr.
Thank you. So I very much concur to what Sylvia stated, namely at the moment at least one-sided methods, so the traditional methods and TNMM seems to be preferred by both tax authorities and taxpayers, and this is mainly because they are easier to objectively present. Namely, it is still feasible to find some comparables and to present a way of thinking based on TNMM while looking into the profit split, which requires pretty complex analysis of the functional profile of both sides of the transaction or multiple sides of the transaction, requires really much attention and experience. But in the future, indeed, when we have a number of counterparts engaged in the transaction involving complex IP and hard to value IPs, I also agree that the future for profit split is still in front of us.
Okay. I would like to cover the topic of dispute resolution and legal certainty, but before that I would just like to ask you all of your view of what is the biggest single challenge when it comes to documentation and the administrative burden in the region. Because yes, maybe some countries stand out, Poland may be more difficult in some respects, but other European countries are also, they also have some special rules, Belgium for example. But do you see any particular issue in the CE which makes things more difficult for multinationals from a documentation, from an administrative burden perspective?
Yeah. So from CE, what I see that I don't see that it's harder or more, but it's maybe different. So there is a different layout or a different design how the local tax authorities or the local legislation requires the documentation. There are of course extra cases like in Romania, the benefit test, which is a top off on the normal kind of VAT 13 action point, or even it's maybe in Poland there are extra requirement of other countries. But if I'm looking the CE as general, I mean, I wouldn't say that in terms of the content there are much more what is required by the VAT action 13. What I think it's really extra and sometimes difficult, that's clearly the language. So that's what I said, that there are more than 20 languages in CE, and then if the local regulators ask it on the local language, that's clearly a huge burden on the companies to translate.
Is that something you also see, Anasha?
Yes, definitely. So in many of the countries, although we can submit the documentation in English or in German language, in many of the cases, the local inspector prefers to have at least a summary translated from the local file. And when it is coming together with a short deadline to submit this together, then that can be challenging. So, for example, in case of Hungary, we normally have very, very short deadline to do this. However, from the other side, of course, it's a big willingness from the company point of view, and the tax inspectors are highly appreciating these efforts that the companies are making. So definitely, if we are submitting the English language, it's a kind of they can tick the box that yes, I have the documentation from the company. But if we would like to have the right interpretation, we need to have a well quality prepared translation to the specific local language, like the Hungarian.
It's interesting how important something that seemingly non-substantial can actually be in practice in increasing the burden and just the resources.
Yes, and especially because we had just a recent case in Hungary, and the tax inspector asked us that whether it is, why it is a problem, it is just a translation. And we said, but we cannot do the translation with an ordinary translation office. We need to go to the experts who prepare the documentation. So it's of course in terms of time management and project management or audit management, if may I say it like this, it's not just regularly doing with the software an automatic translation, especially because these are very unique languages.
Okay, so moving on to dispute resolution. Sorry. Moving on to dispute resolution. One of the questions we asked, what is it that our colleagues see as the most difficult problem when it comes to resolving transfer pricing cases, let's say. And one issue certainly was high on the agenda, and that was the inexperience of courts with transfer pricing cases with economic issues. So maybe I would like to ask Silvia and then Piotr to comment on where they see the resolving of potential double taxation issues going in the future, particularly bearing in mind that the rules are complex as they are, and they are becoming even more complex with the digitalization of the economy, with the new paper of the OECD on financial transactions. All of these, of course, to some extent clarify rules, but of course on another level open the road for even more different interpretations by the two sides of the transaction. So maybe something on, from the menu, ranging from obviously appeals and going to courts through to horizontal monitoring or sort of some kind of a cooperative compliance to maps. What do you see in the future as the main dispute resolution channel in the region?
Mm-hmm. Well, I see the most effective tool to avoid double taxation is a bilateral APA. So this tool can provide taxpayers the most or the highest level of tax certainty, because when you think about the MAP process, it comes always after tax audit. So the time spent on tax audit and also MAP is quite quite long, and compare it to bilateral APAs, which is the negotiation between competent authorities of two countries. I think is the most effective way to avoid double taxation. And this is my opinion, and I see from perspective of tax administration the increasing number, especially in bilateral APAs.
Obviously, if it is feasible to avoid disputes, it's great. So bilateral APAs or multilateral APAs are always very much appreciated. And now, if you are already in the dispute, I would say you should try to resolve it at the lowest feasible level. So discussing with the tax inspector during the audit, trying to explain, trying to present the things and the whole background for the transaction and for the business operations. If this does not seem to be feasible, then you can always negotiate with the tax authorities still during the tax proceeding. If you are not successful there, then definitely MAP arbitration is the solution for you. And I personally would avoid courts. Namely, if you wish to gamble, then you should go to casino rather than try to go to the court.
And then, Moshe, how do you actually in practice approach this? Because I'm sure that you're facing tax audits and potential double taxation issues all the time in multiple places. So what is your practical solution to this? Or is it a completely case-by-case approach?
Yes, definitely it's true, case-by-case. First of all, I think it's worth to try to negotiate during the tax audit with the tax inspector. In terms of trying to accept the tax inspector's view on the situation and on the transaction, and then if we cannot avoid, of course, and if it's worse from economic point of view to proceed with the procedure in front of a court, then it's worse to do this. But many of the cases, it's really time consuming and it's quite expensive. And also the case is similar if we are talking about the mutual agreement procedure. So it's not something that will be solved quickly. And it requires a lot of resources in-house and from external advisors' point of view. And the time what a multinational can spend on this, if you are entering into an MAP or a procedure in front of a court, you will just stop at the time of the time and not focusing on the future, and you're just losing the momentum with the past issues since everything is speed up, even the tax compliance and the transfer pricing compliance, it's really challenging. So it definitely requires some research in terms of whether it's worth to do or not for a company, on a company level.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably not a CE special in this regard. We are also in Austria having bilateral APA cases where we know the tax authorities finally managed to sit down with each other when literally the required or the requested APA period has already passed.
Yeah. Yes.
So just the process to get there took more than 3 years. And of course, in particular, as you say, in a moving environment, you need to do your compliance in the meantime. Maybe the business changes, so the facts are not even the same by the time the discussions happen. This can, of course, have a practical aspect. But before this discussion, you also mentioned another thing, and then I let you also give some more thoughts. But you also mentioned the consistency point. So once you have an APA in one or two countries, yes, that, of course, needs to be presented in the master file, which forces you to then be consistent, exactly, and apply potentially the same principle elsewhere, where it might not be even practical or possible, right?
Yes, exactly. So Chapter 8 of the master file, where we need to disclose all the APAs or rulings, there it's black or white. All the countries, all the jurisdictions can see that what we have, and of course, if the transaction is comparable, then immediately the question come that whether you're applying the same methodology and the same pricing. If not, why not? And this is something what we need to be prepared of. So if we are not applying the same because we have economic reasons or whatever reasons to do something else, we need to document this properly in advance why we are doing this. Actually, I think this is related to the risk appetite of the company. Mm-hmm. How conservative you would like to be. But with having the rulings and the APAs in the master file, it's transparent now worldwide.
Okay, so I think we are running out of time. As a last question, I would like to ask all of you to just reflect a little bit on the CE in connection to the rest of the world, let's say in terms of economic environment and also in terms of operating there. Because all of you have, of course, a very significant international outlook. Sylvia, you also not only working in Slovakia, but also on OECD and EU level. MSA being very much part of a very multinational group, and of course, Piotr advising clients from all over the world. So how do you see the CE and the future of the CE? For our multinational clients, what would you say about it?
I think that doing business or expanding the footprint in the CE region is worse because it's cost effective, and in terms of the knowledge pool that is in this region is definitely something that from what all the multinationals can benefit a lot, and it's not only the R&D or manufacturing function that I'm trying to underline, but even in terms of the financial services and the legislation requirements and all type of state aids or grants or even the tax benefits from the local legislations, this results definitely to think about the CE region as a place where we need to increase the footprint.
Thank you. Well, I can see a huge development, especially in this region, and especially in last years. And I see the relative stability within this region, which can be beneficial for multinational companies.
I think something that Amesha mentioned already, that is talent pool of our people, is of utmost importance. Namely, this is not anymore about the cheap workforce doing the easiest stuff, so operating within the contract manufacturing type of models. This is around developing the global brands and the significant R&D efforts, also including the newest technologies and also including the new financial models and fintech.
Thank you very much for your time and for your extremely valuable insights. And see you next time on the other PwC on the next PwC Europe conference. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.